This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are shooting from the Lineup Media Group studios, and we're also live on Facebook. So welcome all new listeners and also Facebook people. If you have any questions during this show, go ahead and put them on Facebook. We'll try our best to get them on here. But thanks for joining the show, everybody. It is going to be a great one. I am thrilled about today's topic because it is probably one of the hottest topics in the baseball world in the last couple of years. And we have a really top expert that I think will help us clear up a lot of things, even though it's not a perfect science. So before we start, don't forget, if you enjoy the show, go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. Give us a good rating on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also join the show and get updates all the time when new shows come up. So just go to iTunes and Stitcher on baseballoutsidebox.com, hit the logo, and there you can sign up. Also, don't forget, I have a set of 5 instructional DVDs that will give you over 100 games, skills, and drills to help you run a fun, organized practice. Check it out on the website. And, of course, we love being on social media. We're on Facebook now. And also Twitter. So go to @baseballout. We got a lot of tips on Twitter. We put videos up there. Love to, you know, interact with you on Twitter. Please do so. And don't forget, email me also. Love getting your emails. Your emails are awesome, and we respond right away. My where you can email is info@baseballoutsidethebox.com. Now for today's topic, as I mentioned, it is a hot one. It's sizzling, let's put it that way, in the baseball world. The topics: pitching injuries, how they start, how we can minimize them. We know it's not a perfect science, but we're going to be talking about some scientific research that supports some of the things that we will discuss today. And as promised at the ABCA, an outstanding coaches convention, the best one in the world with over 5,000 coaches that attend, we ran into our very good friend David Ozinski there, did a 10-minute pre-interview. What great stuff just on that 10 minutes. So you know the show's going to be outstanding. And we talked to David there, and we promised you we would have him on our show. And here we are for almost an hour show we're going to have on the podcast. So we're thrilled you joined with us. Now, let me tell you a little bit about David. First of all, he's the executive director of the American Baseball Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization founded by our guest today. He founded it along with Dr. Andrews, and we'll explain more, and David will get into a little bit more, but he is the executive director, and he also works alongside the world-renowned orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Andrews. He's the one that really talks about, does a lot of research on the mechanics of throwing, also the injuries, and again, we'll get into all that. So we're thrilled to have David on the show. Along with, you know, David being with Dr. Andrews, David has coached in over 40 countries. He's worked with players, coaches, and parents in education around the world in 4 continents. He was also the designer of one of the best coaching programs in the world. There's several. This is one of them in Australia. He was the original designer of it. That's an outstanding program. And David was also the executive director of the International Baseball Federation, now called the World Baseball Softball Confederation. That is the governing body of the sport that runs baseball worldwide, runs all the international events like the Olympics, the Pan Am Games, World Cup, and so forth. And David and Dr. Robert Smith, the president at that time of the International Baseball Federation, they were very instrumental in bringing baseball back in the Olympics. But not just that, but developing the sport worldwide. They're just great people, and David's a super person. He's a great friend, and we're going to give you the websites on the American Baseball Foundation. We'll put it up on the show notes. That's AmericanBaseballFoundation.com, and on the American Sports Medical Institute, where Dr. Andrews does all the research, has a lot of research information on there. That is ASMI.org. You got to check both of those out. We'll be talking more about that. So, all right, let's welcome my great friend and a great individual, David Ozinski, to the show. David, how are you, man?
Fine, Pete. Thank you very much. Although I think you were talking about somebody else when you made that introduction.
You know what? I practiced a little bit, I think. I know, but I know you, and you know, I know you're extremely modest. That's an understatement. But what you've done, you know, to work with kids around the world and also in the U.S. is incredible. And one thing, probably one of the most important things, I actually failed to mention, and I'll mention it myself that I failed to mention this. You know, your organization, you're the executive director of the American Baseball Foundation, a nonprofit organization. But what you guys do is, you know, your vision is to educate youth through sports-based academics there in Alabama, Birmingham. And that's where also ASMI is located. You know, this is a great program because if I remember correctly, it's for underprivileged kids. And what I'd love to do is have our audience around the world know a little bit about what you do with that program and how it's benefits some really, really needy kids.
Well, thank you very much, Pete. I'd love to talk about that. And then I want to go ahead and explain a little bit about the setup here in Birmingham, Alabama, which has been fortunate to house Dr. James R. Andrews, the visionary sports medicine doctor who really heads up the brunt of the research that at one point in time should be very useful for parents out there who are trying to do the best thing by their children. So I'll first go ahead and talk a little bit about our program, which is we've developed over the last 20 years, which is not related to pitching injuries. It's related to the unfortunate need that we have throughout most of our urban centers around the country, and I mean cities, I suppose, that there's a number of children who read below grade level. They're reading, for one reason or another, they come into school, they don't have the proper tutelage, that is nurturing by a two-parent family, and they come into school behind. That is, their vocabulary is deficient. People haven't read to them, and they come in there behind. And what happens to a number of them, not to all, but to a number of them, is that they stay behind for several years. And then when it becomes very difficult to navigate because the reading level is somewhat higher, say around fourth, fifth, sixth grade, they're the ones who are headed for dropping out of school. So our foundation has a program that we've been running for 20 years, in which we use sport as a vehicle to improve their reading levels, because they get tricked into reading because all the reading that we do is related to sports, and particularly people like many people would know about Jackie Robinson, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson, and some they wouldn't know about, Mamie Peanuts Johnson, the first woman to actually pitch in the Negro Leagues. Tony Drake, who was the second baseman for the Indianapolis Clowns. Those are the people that the children are reading about. And of course, once again, they get excited about playing the sport, and then they also somehow get excited about reading, and we've had very great results in that program. So I appreciate your allowing me to mention it. I know it's not the type of thing that many baseball coaches and parents are involved in, because obviously they're most involved in nurturing their own children and using sport as a vehicle to complement the nurturing process.
Absolutely. But if we're going to, you know, if we're going to develop young people real early, I mean, we got to grab these people young, make it fun for them when it comes to reading, because that's going to develop their mind. So it is a great program. And I believe if you instituted this program anywhere else or just in that area?
Well, we have over the years, over the last 20 years, we've run it in St. Louis, and we've run it in Indianapolis also. And we actually, believe it or not, translated some of the material, went down to Recife, Brazil, and ran a program. So you need to look, get in on your geography apps and find out where Recife is in northern Brazil.
Go ahead.
No, in any case, our program now runs an entire month in the summer, and quite quickly. That the reason for the program running 6.5 hours a day for 1 month in the summer is so that there is enough academics, that is math and reading, to have the children make gains during the period that we're teaching them. So we've stepped up the program over the last several years so that it's a fairly sophisticated program that takes some a good deal of resources to implement. But then, of course, the outcomes are very vital to the self-confidence of the children who read better and they do better in math when they come out of the program and are ready to get back into school.
Absolutely. And for everybody out there, all our listeners, if you have a, you know, willing to donate to help support the program, or you want to know more about the program, go to AmericanBaseballFoundation.com and you'll get David's information and he'll contact you. So please do that because it's a great program. Now, David, let's keep going on and let's talk about, because you know, ASMI, obviously you've been involved with them for a long time, the American Science Medical Institute. And again, that's ASMI.org is their website. You know, Dr. Andrews is obviously known to most of the people in the industry of baseball, maybe not as much with the youth levels and some of the volunteers. But tell us about that program, what you've done with Dr. Andrews, and then we'll get into the hot topic and we'll get some more questions about that.
Okay, fine. My relationship with Dr. Andrews goes back to the mid-1980s when working for the World Body for Amateur Baseball. We recruited him as our worldwide medical commission chairman. We knew that that medicine needed to be applied to sport, so we went to the best, and he kindly agreed to become that chairman. And he was such for a number of years. Then when the World Body transferred to Europe, I didn't transfer with it. So I came down to Alabama and begged Dr. Andrews to let me start this foundation, the purpose of which has been to get out information related to the research done at the American Sports Medicine Institute here in Birmingham. He had moved his clinic, if everybody understands, he obviously has a group of orthopedic surgeons that he works with, and mm-hmm. he centered that in Birmingham. Then he started the American Sports Medicine Institute as his research arm. That is the research entity that actually implements these far-reaching studies that hopefully have eventually an effect on the mom and dad who are trying to do the best thing for their children. He also is involved with a rehabilitation group so that the protocols for a professional, even an amateur pitcher, once they have some type of surgery, the protocols that they undergo to rehab are he and his associates invented many of them. And then our little foundation that he allowed us to start under his name was to get the research out to the public. Mm-hmm. And we did that for many years through coaching courses, principally in Alabama, actually, you know, short coaching courses where we were, our specialty is, or has been teaching coaches how to teach children how to throw and pitch. And mm-hmm. then we weave in the ideas of injury prevention to those courses. Now, over the last 20 years, our role as such has actually changed, because the internet is there and a lot of people, you know, self-educate, and therefore they don't really see the need in having somebody come out and teach them. They kind of learn it through the internet. So that role has diminished over the years, but I wanted to put the whole, the groupings that are here in Birmingham into context so that people see that there's a orthopedic clinic, there's a research arm, the ASMI, there's a rehab protocol, which now is called Champion Sports. That's the entity that does the rehab. And then there's this the little ABF that I run, which is supposed to get the research information out. And as I just said, has been superseded to a certain extent by the internet.
Sure. Now, you know, earlier I mentioned in the intro, the elephant in the room. And, you know, again, this is what I'm talking about as far as the elephant in the room. Just recently, in the last 2-3 years, and you know, I've been in the game 38 years, and when I played, there weren't a lot of injuries, whether it be pitching injuries or throwing injuries. Now you're seeing a lot more, and you know, there's some, and there's a National Institute of, you know, the High School National Program Institute of Pitch Counts in all the high schools, and I thought that was good, you know, just from to kind of send a message, because You know, we need to be careful how many, how, you know, how much guys pitch or gals pitch or whoever it is. But the issue that I have and the question I have, a couple. One, you know, there's all these injuries, and also there's a lot of experts, unfortunately, that really don't have a lot of research behind a lot of things they're doing. But the main one is, you know, you're getting a lot of injuries, but, you know, it's great that we have a pitch count system nationally for high schools. But, you know, I would assume as a common sense reality that injuries start when you're really young. Can you address that?
Well, as you said, there is a lot of science, and most of the time, or not most of the time, but science generates its own other questions also. So there is no definitive answer for your question or for other general questions related to injuries in baseball. For example, if you were to ask me, well, you know, how much does mechanics or poor mechanics play in a pitcher's injury? The answer would be, you know, I'd be skirting around the answer for about 20 minutes because no one really knows that. So let's go back to your question as far as injuries starting with the youth. The American Sports Medicine Institute, the research arm here in Birmingham, undertook a study, and I was part of it during its formative years, and I'll explain that shortly. But the study was a 10-year study, a longitudinal study on 481 pitchers, and they were all in Alabama, actually. And they followed these pitchers for a 10-year period to determine, you know, what was the rate of injury and what might have been the causes of injury. And they had a couple of hypotheses to begin with. In any case, I mean, what they did is they called up these pitchers year after year after each season and had them document what actually happened to them, and were most in looking for their rate of serious injury, which might be one that they would have to have surgery on, or that actually ushered them out of the game. And the results is that of the 481 pitchers, actually only 5% were seriously injured over a 10-year period. So that in itself tells you that the incidence of injury in baseball, not only just pitchers, but in contusions and so forth, is relatively low when you compare it to other sports like gymnastics and football. So there is a low incidence of injury, especially in youth sport. Now, if you were among the 5% of the 481 pitchers who were seriously injured, ended your career or put it back, and therefore you would want to know what might have caused the injury.
Sure.
And the conclusions are very as I said, researchers ask, you know, they come up with more questions than answers. But one of the main causal factors, or one that they could identify, was the fact that the pitchers who are more prone to injury pitch more than 100 innings in a calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
If the young pitcher pitch more than 100 innings in a calendar year, that means that their risk of injury went up, and therefore that was identified as being important in the 5% that were injured. So not only this study, but a number of studies have suggested that overuse is the primary cause of injury in pitchers. Now, you have to go back and say, if my 10-year-old is pitching more than 100 innings per year, because I have my 10-year-old not only in the spring season, excuse me, but I've got him in the fall, in the summer season, and I got him pitching in the fall season. And is he pitching more than 100 innings, and is he more likely to have an injury? Then the answer is yes. There's no doubt about it because of this one study.
And now, so, Dave, when you say 100 innings, since you're on that, we're talking about 100 innings. I'm sure you're going to get to it, but it's also 100 innings. Does that determine how many? What about pitches?
Well, that they didn't have any way of actually over the 10 years of having them recall their pitchers. There was no way they could get that. So the, gotcha. The benchmark that they were looking for was innings. Mm-hmm. Now, let me relate your question, that question to pitches and how does that relate to innings? Well, from the concept over the years, over the last 30 years that overuse has been the main culprit, then ASMI has tried to suggest that that pitch limits is a good idea, mm-hmm. and that therefore you need to look at how many pitches your pitchers are pitching in each game, and then try to limit that so that the amount of work by the pitcher is controlled. Now, you're correct. Well, let's go back. The most high schools, if they were, had any limits, all in most youth leagues had innings limits. But right. as you can see, if you want to actually control overuse, then you need to go down a notch and try to figure out how many pitches right. one should throw.
Right, and so you guys a chart also, and I believe ASMI developed a chart for pitch counts for certain ages.
They did. That's right. They did, and they had it approved by USA Baseball, and I think I know Little League Baseball uses something yes. similar to it. Now they came up with their own idea, and I think maybe a couple of them, maybe Pete, you know more about that. What other youth organizations are actually using pitch limits? But it all goes back to this concept of overuse being the main injury factor in youth pitching. And for example, some other concepts that have been worked on, that have been studied in research, such as pitch types. Pete, probably how many people over the years have said that when they throw the fork ball or the splitter, that it hurts their forearm? Have you ever heard that before?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I've heard many times.
Yeah, so that's anecdotal ideas that maybe if you're a professional and you're going to throw a lot of fork balls, your forearm's going to hurt, and then maybe you might develop an injury. But it is a clear indication, anecdotally, that don't teach your child the fork ball.
Yeah, right.
Because it is something that could possibly hurt him. Now, when the research is centered on the curveball, or to an extent on the slider and the fastball and the changeup, the research clearly shows over the years that there are three, that if you lump the fastball, the slider, and the curveball in one category, that would be high stress category on the shoulder and the elbow. Mm-hmm. So I'll repeat that. You lump the fastball, you know, our great pitch, with the curveball and the slider in high stress category. The only pitch that the research shows falls out of that high stress category is the changeup. So by definition, if your youth moms, dads, and coaches are listening, they need to teach the changeup right away to any youth pitcher, according to the research.
And it's easier to throw, easier to grip.
Well, it's not easier to throw or grip, depending on how you throw it. There's nothing easier about it. It's a different pitch, and therefore, if you're a 10-year-old, you know, you have to work on it to develop it. But it's easier on the arm.
Just a preface. I probably should have mentioned more than that. What I meant to say was it's easier than the curveball, obviously. One, you just talked about the stress, but it's easier to throw once you've worked on it, a changeup, than it is a curveball.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. So that's another area. The pitch types would be another area that research has delineated. And note that both the curveball and the fastball are in the same high stress area for the shoulder and the elbow. Therefore, the over the years the curveball has had a very anecdotally, so don't throw the curveball and so forth, which Dr. Andrews still adheres to, you know, don't throw the curveball before you shave.
I'm with him.
But what you're trying to do, what are you really trying to do with the pitcher? with the young pitcher. You're trying to have that pitcher be successful in throwing the ball to a spot. And mm-hmm. you want that pitcher to learn the second pitch, which is the changeup, as young as possible, so that gives the pitcher a better opportunity for success against the batter by having more than one pitch and one speed that he or she throws to a spot. You are also wanting that pitcher to be able to develop his or her arm to a maximum degree, and therefore you're wanting the pitcher to throw to be able to spot the fastball because that throwing the fastball as a pitcher is akin to throwing the ball as a shortstop or throwing the ball from across the diamond from third to first. So one point I'd like to make without you asking the question is that if you're a youth mentor out there, you should be teaching the child to throw properly. And then you can base the pitching, as we just discussed, on proper throwing mechanics. And I think, in my opinion, that's going to give the eventual pitcher more longevity.
Absolutely. And, now we're also on Facebook Live, and we got a question, and I think it's a question, actually a comment, that you had mentioned earlier, coaches education. That's the reason we do the podcast. And then I know there's a lot of programs out there. There's a couple things I just want to mention. One, I believe that every youth program, every national youth program, whether it's here or around the world, needs to, one, implement the pitch count program simply because it's a guideline and it just keeps kids healthy. And the other thing is, you mentioned it, David, I want you to address this. Coaches' education is so important. I mean, that's what we're doing here, but it needs to be increased, because if you have pretty good coaches, I'm assuming, and they know a lot of the research behind this. And by the way, when we talk about research, I'd much rather have research than have somebody tell me their opinion. I realize research isn't perfect and it's going to bring up new questions, but I love the research more than opinion.
Right. Well, obviously, if you were to go to the dentist, mm-hmm. And the technician said, "Well, I think I'm going to pull that tooth out."
Yeah.
You'd start to say, "Well, let me give a second thought to that."
Yeah, it was only twice.
Because you somehow know that dentist went to school for, 7 or 8 years and probably knows how to pull that tooth out a little bit better than the technician.
Right.
And the same thing goes for, youth baseball. You would like to have, I've forgotten the name of the manager of the Chicago Cubs.
Joe Madden.
Do you remember him? Yeah, Joe. I'd like to have Joe Madden as my son's youth baseball coach, but unfortunately, Joe's not available.
Yeah, right.
And therefore, you. So what are you really doing if you're a youth baseball coach? And what are you trying to accomplish? Are you trying to accomplish the same thing that Joe Madden is trying to? The answer, in my opinion, is no, definitely not, because Joe Madden has this whole system around him, as does every major league manager, to pick out not only the best they can find, but of course the best that complements their team. Mm-hmm. And they're putting together this huge array of talent so that they can compete at the major league level. Now, what is a youth coach doing? The youth coach is taking a group of children who have a range of skill levels. And that's a big difference than Joe Madden. You have a huge range of skill levels. Most of the skill levels are low level. They're not the Chicago Cub level or the New York Yankee level. They're low level. And all the coach is trying to do in that period, that let's say the season, the way it used to be anyway, the season that the coach is working with the child, is to take that child from a from X level to Y level, to move them up that line, that skill level line along towards becoming an elite athlete. That's really all the coach is trying to do. So therefore, if you want to have a child become a better baseball, softball player, you then intuitively know you have to teach that child how to throw.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the child can't throw, then eventually that child will be asked to leave baseball, and maybe even softball. I'm not sure.
And David, our coaches out there, a lot of volunteers also. Give them an idea. You talked about, you know, obviously overuse being the number one issue when it comes to injuries. What other areas that do they need to look for? You know, and you mentioned mechanics. You know, obviously, you know, common sense says if you have, you know, better mechanics than worse mechanics, it's got to be the better. It's got to help. So what else should they be looking for in young kids? And a little bit about how you would handle a 12-year-old team, and you maybe have four or five pitchers. Would you ask for more pitch? Would you try to get more pitchers on that team, or develop more pitchers on that team so everybody's a pitcher?
Well, I don't know that everybody's a pitcher, but to answer your question, let me go back to, okay, so the research has honed in for years on overuse related to baseball pitching, pitch types, what we just discussed before that. Right. And of course, pitching mechanics. Now, also, it's intuitive that conditioning is a factor, and of course, nutrition. So those areas, conditioning and nutrition, are areas that maybe affect more than anything else the elite athlete. However, if you have a child who's obese or tending to be obese, then you know, that child's not, theoretically, not going to perform as well in baseball, softball, because of their low level agility and so forth.
Yeah, I would assume strength also, right?
Pardon?
I would assume that, you know, with young kids, strength is a major factor too, because maybe their body won't allow them to do certain things.
Well, that's right. If you've ever coached children and they've got a great swing, but they don't hit the ball out of the infield, that's right, because of their strength level. And what I've told the dads over the years is just, you know, keep working with your child, because as they get stronger, he is going to be a good hitter. And that's proven me out a couple of times. But your question about what to do with 12-year-olds and pitching staffs, not all children, are going to, want to pitch, desire to pitch, or, maybe are have a high degree of, dexterity and mobility and flexibility to pitch. Mm-hmm. So, but what you're trying to do, though, is what you'd love to do is to have a number of the players who throw properly. And if they throw properly, it's quite easy to allow them to get on the mound and you know, allow them to begin pitching. And so you would want to work quite diligently on having them use proper throwing mechanics, and then, you know, test them out as you will pitching, and of course giving them at least two pitches. Even at 12 years old, you probably want to stay with the two pitches. That is the fastball and the changeup. Sure. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. And you know, in a little bit here, we're going to be talking about the mechanics. I just want to go back a second and mention everybody around the world. We're on with David Ozinski, Executive Director of the American Baseball Foundation. He's also has worked with the world-renowned orthopedic surgeon, sports medicine expert, Dr. Andrews, with the American Sports Medical Institute, a laboratory in Alabama, Birmingham, where they research injuries and also pitching mechanics. And we're talking with David. What I wanted to mention was, when I mentioned strength, because it might even lead into the mechanics in a little bit. We mentioned strength. If a player's weak in certain areas, I mean, is he going to be able to throw correctly? Or because if we're talking about 11-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and is there something they can do to become a little stronger that allows them to throw a little bit better?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. There could be deficiencies in the athlete at a young age. And in an ideal world, you would take the athlete to a physiotherapist, have them tested for, you know, with the test that they use for a throwing athlete, and mm-hmm. that would bear out maybe an injury in the not an injury, but a weakness, let's say, in the core. You know, in the abdominal area, and in maybe even the hips, and therefore the physiotherapist would give you exercises which would be age appropriate for your athlete to actually improve the core. And I know a lot of baseball people also have those types of exercises. But that would be what you would do in an ideal world. And therefore, while the child is enjoying the sport, they're also improving their overall agility and their overall strength too.
Sure. All right. So now let's do this. We're going to get into the mechanics here, but I also want to address one more thing. When it comes to coaches, you know, a lot of times, you know, they've got the pitch count charts. They can follow. It's a guideline, but those are guidelines. Give us an idea. I think it'd be great for our audience. You know, if you're a coach out there and you're especially a volunteer because, you know, you don't do it every day, and you want to be careful with young kids, what are some of the things they can look for, you know, to take them out of a ball game? Because, you know, obviously the most obvious, they're not throwing strikes, right? You better take them out. But give us an idea of what symptoms that, you know, kids might have that, you know, this might be time to, you know, get them out and bring them in, you know, another day.
Well, when they look over at you, that's a good indication.
Yeah.
You know, they might not say it, but they're saying, get me out of here.
Exactly.
No, you know, you're right. You're right. If they're erratic in their location, and they're not just missing the spot, they're actually missing the strike zone by a wide margin, and then they try to adjust, and then they miss the strike zone on the other side by a wide margin, that's a good indication, you know, that they're probably fatigued.
Sure.
But the fatigue, when you're fatigued, and it's your arm that's fatigued, it doesn't necessarily show. So,
right.
So you're looking for that, as you mentioned, you're looking for, the ball flying all over the place. And then sometimes, you know, if they're getting a little sore, they start wheeling their arm around on the mound. I'm sure you've seen that. They'll start wheeling it around and around. And you're asking yourself, well, why in the world are they doing that? Well, of course, they're maybe getting a little sore, or they're feeling that that they're not hitting the spot, and they keep changing their release point and not being able to fix it. So those are a couple of areas, and then when they come off, if there's any redness or any particular thing on the arm, obviously that's an instant no-no. You want to get them out of the ball game. So I don't think there's any magic potion. It really goes back to what you were saying to begin with.
Yeah, no, those are great points. And then when a youngster comes off the mound like that, is there anything they should be doing, you know, after they pitch that would, you know, would help them recuperate a little bit? Even at, you know, and I understand it could be some in-house leagues, you know, that are 10-year-old kids or 12-year-olds. It could be travel teams, but anybody, what should they be doing to kind of help them recuperate a little bit?
Well, you know, I'm certainly not an expert on that, but there has been research regarding the use of ice, and no one's ever proven that ice is really bad for the athlete applied appropriately after pitching. So if, in fact, the athlete thinks that the ice is going to do him or her good, then that can be applied for the specified amount of time. And so that would be one thing. And then, of course, going back to the research that we talked about before, one of the hypotheses was that the youth pitcher should not be playing pitcher and catcher in the same game or even in general.
Mm-hmm.
After 10 years, the research really wasn't significant, or the results weren't significant, but there is a line of thought, and I think that's one of the guidelines that USA Baseball puts out, is saying now don't let your child pitch and catch.
Right, right. All right, listen.
So that would be it. So you don't lift the pitcher and put him as catcher. That would be another thing.
Makes sense. And also, we're not getting to the end, but I want to get into the pitching part. When we talk about pitching mechanics or biomechanics of the, you know, of throwing and pitching, what are some of the areas that you guys have found that are detrimental to pitchers and throwers that they, you know, they shouldn't be doing? Maybe you could address that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have to say that I've learned a lot of lessons over the years, because just like a lot of other people, I thought I was pretty good at recognizing mechanical faults and fixing mechanical faults. But
I'm with you on that.
At the start of the 10-year research study that I mentioned earlier, we had the opportunity to videotape from three angles a number of those pictures, and what happened was we analyzed, we being myself and a couple other pitching coaches, analyzed, I've forgotten how many, but it was a significant number. And then the ASMI, the Research Institute, brought in, I think it was a handful, but it was about a dozen or 15 pitchers. They analyzed those pitchers with the biomechanical analysis that they have, that they've developed here. And the amount of diversion between the biomechanical analysis and the pitching analysis was humbling, to put it mildly. So therefore, this is a big caveat saying, you want to look for certain things, but don't trust yourself too much, so that you become quote unquote an expert.
Sure, but there I'm assuming there's got to be some protocols that have been over the years, over that shows that kids or pitchers should be doing certain things that helps them not only with control but also helps them reduce maybe stress on their joints or something that, you know, contrary to what would be, you know, detrimental.
Well, if you look at the major leagues, you'll see all types of pitching styles. Mm-hmm. They got, each one of those athletes got to the major leagues with that pitching style. Now, whether they're going to remain there for a long period of time is dependent maybe on their mechanics and maybe on their effectiveness. And once you start asking a major league pitcher to change the mechanics, they're probably going to defer a little bit because they got there on those mechanics and they don't want to change. So I'm putting to you, I'm going to answer your question, but I want to make sure that your listeners understand that there's no proven way to do it. Sure. And one of the criticisms of the American Sports Medicine Institute, maybe in some parts in the baseball world, is that yes, we have a model here and we teach from that model. And therefore the criticism would be, okay, well, if the athlete doesn't fall in your model, then the athlete is not competitive. And of course we know that is not the case.
Right. Right.
For example, just to give you an example. Okay. So we here using the ASMI model want the athlete's foot to fall on the throwing side, land a little bit to the throwing side, maybe about 4 to 5 inches with the toe turned in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if the athlete steps straight ahead and has the foot straight ahead, is that necessarily a fault that's going to affect or be causal effect in an injury? Mm. Well, I don't think anyone really knows.
Gotcha.
The hip might be prematurely opened by the angle of the foot. Am I getting too complicated or any sense?
We'd like to get into that because I think that's important.
Well, so what is suggested here, you know, might not really be a debilitating factor for a number of athletes. So that's why old timers will always say, well, there's more than one way to skin a cat. Now, sure. Having said that, for example, you are always trying to make sure that what is a high stress activity, that is pitching is a high stress activity because of the intensity of the pitch, you know, trying to get close to maximum velocity out of the ball. That's high stress for the elbow and shoulder, which are the two areas that have been most studied in baseball pitching over the years. Now, in order to not necessarily to reduce the stress, but in order to have your mechanics reflect a stress that's not debilitating, then maybe, for example, when you're in your movements and you're actually separating the ball from the glove and your arm throwing arm swings back, well, you would like to have that elbow at a 90-degree angle with your trunk, mm-hmm. or your trunk area. And then as you actually rotate and you torque your body really, really rapidly, you want to have that elbow rotate at that same 90-degree angle and not vary. That is, go above it, which would be abduction, or go below it, which is adduction. So you would want to maintain that 90-degree angle. And that theoretically is going to be the least stressful on your elbow and your throwing shoulder.
And when your front lands, where should your elbows be?
Well, theoretically, you want that back elbow on that 90-degree angle with the ball beyond it, if that makes any sense. And then you want your front elbow more or less on that same 90-degree angle in front of your body.
Okay, super. That's great to know.
So, well, that's the theory. And so if you're below, let's say when you take the ball out of the glove and your front foot hits and your elbow's below 90 degrees and back of you, then your body naturally wants to pull it up to 90 degrees when you release the ball. And that the pulling effect or the torquing effect there might increase the stress on your shoulder or your elbow.
Sure. Now you hear a lot. Yes, very much. And also you hear a lot about stride length. You know, is there any determination with stride length? You know, does it matter how far
the
stride is short or long?
I mean, off the top of my head, the stride length that's used in our model, you know, of over 400 pitchers analyzed, is about 83% from I think that's from the rubber to the front ankle.
Mm-hmm. That's
what's in our model. So if the athlete is beyond that, then you have to see about maybe he might be blocking his throwing side hip when he turns, when he torques, because of the stride length. Or if he's below that, you know, the very short stride length, then normally he's probably not generating very, very fast hip velocity, and also throwing the ball from a very erect position. So if I could equate that, if you learn how to throw and then you elongate the stride to at least 80, because you never throw with an 80%, 83% stride length between your feet, correct? You'd mm-hmm. have your feet more or less under your body. But when you pitch, you're going to elongate that stride length, and that's going to allow you to generate more torquing power in your body, and going to use that to actually catapult the ball and get more velocity on it. So you can be above it and below it. If you're below it, you're probably almost by definition going to be under you're rotating at a slow velocity. If you're far above it, or you're far above it according to your body, then you're going to be probably not rotating your front hip as fast as possible. And that could be, you know, you could be losing a little bit of velocity. Now, I think Nolan Ryan had a stride length of over 100%. I can't remember, but maybe you know more about that. But he was quite effective. So it didn't really, with the way his body was arranged, it didn't bother him to go have a very long stride length.
Right. Now, I understand, you know, we've got about 5 minutes left, and I understand that, you know, everybody's going to be a little different. I'm assuming with stride length, there's some flexibility strength issues, because if we're talking about young kids, some of them may struggle to be able to get to a certain stride length. Would that be a hinder? Is that why we're talking about making sure that also young kids, you know, have some strength and some flexibility?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're exactly right. That's that can their development in the upper leg and can actually affect their ability to get to longer stride length. So, yes, that's definitely a factor that can eventuate.
All right, and now one question that you get, and just got it on Facebook Live. You know, especially for young kids, and again, understanding that everybody's a little different, you're not going to teach everybody exactly the same. Have you found that, is it easier for young kids to pitch from a windup, from the stretch? Is there velocity issues there? Does it really matter, and so forth?
Yeah. There's no doubt it's easier from the stretch, because you have less moving parts. And mm-hmm. the younger the child is, obviously, the the more moving parts they have, the more difficult it is to control them. So, you kind of start from the stretch and then maybe graduate to the windup. Now, the trend for some of these very great pitchers is to go back and throw from the stretch, and they're not losing velocity at all. And as my recollection is that maybe there was only a 1 or 2 mile difference between stretch and the windup in general. So, and of course, with these great pitchers, there's no change at all. So I go from the stretch to be able to to have less moving parts, and the child probably be able to control his or her body better than the windup.
Now, another issue that comes up, and I think this is not addressed enough, is, you know, the ball size. You know, the size of the ball for some young kids is pretty big. It's kind of like us throwing a 12-inch softball. Here in Chicago, we throw 16-inch softball, which is even bigger. And it's harder to throw. How do you address that when a youngster struggles to have the proper grip?
Well, assuming that the ball is mandated by the league, you can't change the ball size. So that then you just take your three fingers across
the ball. David, I just want to say, you can't change the ball size because you might get sued, but it might be the best thing to do, right?
Well, you might, maybe not the size, there has been research on the weights of the balls, and slightly underweighted ball has been shown to be effective, and it doesn't change the mechanics. So right. Why should a young child, you know, throw the normal baseball when he can throw an underweighted ball that doesn't change the mechanics? That research has been documented. But of course, is somebody in North Chicago Youth League worried about finding an underweighted baseball that fits into the criteria that was used in the research? It's
right.
a little bit complicated, but otherwise you want to take the three fingers and put them across the wide seams instead of the two fingers. Mm-hmm. So that you have more control over the ball.
That's great. That's awesome advice. And lastly, this is something I just want to kind of open it up, give you the forum here to, you know, kind of talk to our coaches, players, parents, not only in the U.S., but all over the world, about this topic. You know, any last minute advice you want to give them, when it comes to pitching, you know, all year round, pitching injuries or whatever it may be. And then we'll finish the show from there.
Well, I don't know that I have any great advice. I had a pitcher when I was a pitcher growing up. He was my son, and I tried to do the types of things that we've talked about. First of all, I tried to make sure that he actually loved the game and therefore wanted to play the game. Mm-hmm. And so the more fun that he had growing up, the more chances he was likely to continue playing. And then once again, he became a pitcher, and of course he played other positions, and he threw two pitches for a number of years, and let the curveball take care of itself later on as he became a more elite pitcher. So if you as a youth coach forget that the object of sport is for the enjoyment of the child, then, and you're worried about teaching too much or putting your values on the child, then you as a coach are defeating the basic idea of what youth sport should be all about.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. David, I got to tell you, we love having you on the show. What a great show. Thanks again for being on. We hope to have you at another time also.
Well, Pete, my friend, it's great talking to you. And if there's anything I can help with, Caliendo Sports, I want to do that.
Yeah, all right. And then I forgot to mention that David also has been with us with the International Sports Group. We were together in Mexico for a week training coaches, actually a certification course, which David's done so many of them with the Mexican Baseball Federation. And that was a lot of fun. And boy, did I learn a lot. One of the best instructors I've ever been around. And listen, to all our listeners, we really appreciate listening to the show. Without you, we do not have a show. So keep listening. Thank you to all our Facebook Live people out there. Please share the show with everybody you know. Before that, we end the show, don't forget, David Ozinski with the American Baseball Foundation. Go to the website, AmericanBaseballFoundation.com. Help him out. He's got a great program. And don't forget, the American Sports Medical Institute. That's ASMI.org. All the best research information. It's got the pitch counts there, program. You'll see a lot of great info there. Now, what we ask you all the time is continue to share our show on social media. We've got Twitter at Baseball Out. Join. We got tips and videos on there all the time. Of course, our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. You can go to the icons there with to join the show. And don't forget, email me anything you like. Love getting your emails. We'll get back to you right away. Thank you, everybody. This has been an outstanding show. Remember, coaches, education is the key to building the foundation of our sports. So keep getting smarter, one, by listening to Baseball Outside the Box, but also listen to other podcasts that have great information. Continue to get better as a coach. And, you know, we know that we have some of the best innovative minds in the game of baseball on our show who love to challenge the status quo. Remember, I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.